In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. So glad you're joining us today. As every week, we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. This week, I had the pleasure of being the guest on three other shows, the Jane Carroll Show, on Billy Painter's The Bearded Patriot Show, and I also want to thank John B. Wells for having me on his show, Caravan to Midnight. He'd invited me on to talk about where Oregon went wrong, how the left corrupted a once red state. And I really hope that my appearance there helped expose what is happening here in Oregon to his national audience so that they will be able to use that to protect and defend their own states. Although there were a couple dots I didn't connect until I was thinking about the discussion afterwards. Another layer in what happened when the environmental left attacked Oregon and destroyed its timber industry. Pre-Spotted Owl, Oregon was a rural-focused state, proud of its heritage and proud of its timber industry. The wood needed to build homes and businesses in other states was grown and harvested here. Oregon was helping build America, and in doing so, it created jobs here in Oregon and even elsewhere as those homes were built. And revenue from all that timber funded the schools. It was its own wonderful and well-designed economic ecosystem. It was Oregon's identity. That's what the left took from us. Not just our industry, they took Oregon's identity. We became ashamed of our industry, ashamed of our identity, and tearing that down, stripping people of their identity is what the left does. They have to. That's how Marxism and all its forms break down societies, seeding chaos and destruction. It's what the communist Chinese did to our downed airline pilots in Korea and Vietnam. It's what cults do to new adherents. They have to strip a person of their identity so it can be replaced with a new one. One that will leave its past behind to adopt a new identity that can and will be controlled by the leaders. And that's what they're attempting to do all across America. Make us feel ashamed of our history and heritage. Make us feel ashamed of capitalism and the free market system which made America the most successful nation in the world. Make us feel ashamed of the American dream, or even the pursuit of it. Right now, the left is launching a frontal assault on our education system, not just to indoctrinate rather than to educate, but to disarm kids even before they leave schools, so they don't have the skills to be successful, and attacking those who are successful, trying to make them feel ashamed for succeeding. Success, of course, underpins so much of the American dream, and they're taking that from kids. Today's show, we'll be talking about what's happening in Oregon schools, some new efforts to get some election integrity in Oregon, and a new attack on our rights, our gun rights, and our right to self-defense. And we'll talk with Alex Garlanos as he is seeking to take one of Oregon's congressional districts away from the Democrats. You won't heal the damage, and things won't get better by electing Democrats. They have all gone off the rails. Don't go with them. I'd like to welcome Mark Thielman back to the show. He is a political advocate, education consultant, and activist. And he's also the chief petitioner for Real School Choice here in Oregon. Mark, it is great to talk to you again.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, in fact, getting ready to go on air here, you had some exciting news about the ballot initiative for Real School Choice. Why don't you talk to our audience about that?
Yeah, well, as of yesterday, you know, we've officially passed the constitutional test, and the ballot titles are set, and the initiatives, both for school choice and for open enrollment, will be going to ballot. It's a big deal. And we've done accomplished this in spite of our government, not yes. because of it. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are some other ballot initiatives that we definitely want to talk to you about today. The ballot measure 114, this is just absolutely horrid. So we'll talk to you mm-hmm. a little bit later about that. But also, I mentioned there that you're a political activist, and you've got an organization that you're running now focused around election integrity, BattlegroundOregon.org, if people want to go visit that and help support that. Talk to our audience a little bit about the efforts that you guys are doing there.
Well, you know, conservatives don't always play nice in the sandbox with each other. You know, no. Conservatives by nature are individualistic, and they kind of march to their own drum. And they're also very tolerant of each other, but they don't always cooperate. So I thought, you know, how can we affect kind of what the left is good at, which is conformity? Mm-hmm. How do we get information share in a way that's not threatening to individualize conservative groups and get them working together. And so I started Battleground Oregon. Obviously, the title, people kind of find it to be catchy. And my job is to talk to everybody, all conservative groups, and coordinate efforts with them. So the first theme has been election integrity, with the intent of filing a federal lawsuit. And as a result, anybody in Oregon who's filed election cases, like Tim Sipple would be the most high profile one recently, Battleground has coordinated with all those folks, all the plaintiffs and their attorneys and the legal teams, strategy team. And what it's led to is this new community of election integrity minded people. And it's been a big success. We're getting ready to file a lawsuit this week, federal lawsuit. I can go into the particulars a little later, but like tonight, I'm going to be the featured guest at the Executive Club up in Portland, talking about this very lawsuit, working with Stephen Jonkis, the attorney. So really, really, really excited about this. When conservatives work together, the product they produce, is, in my opinion, is both persuasive, politically effective, and second to none. And that's what we're putting together here with Battleground.
Well, that's really exciting, and we'll definitely come back around to that. You know, speaking of the Sipple case, originally we had scheduled you to come on because the judge should have filed something by now. She should have made her decision, but of course she's dragging this out. And this is the to remind people, this is the Tim Sipple election database case there in Washington County, where he wants to release this database. Not only has Washington County said no, but they have filed this lawsuit after the attorney general there said, no, this is public information. You need to release this. They filed suit against Tim to keep this quiet. And, of course, then the Secretary of State, whose job it is to hold these government agencies accountable, has also said, oh, no, we need to totally keep this secret and private. So we don't have any updates on that. But since you are an education expert there, you're a consultant, this is really your area of expertise. Let's pivot to that for a little bit here. You know, it's really unbelievable just how bad things are getting for our kids. Oregon just continues to slide in terms of our outcomes. You know, we know that the latest proficiency scores, they hit rock bottom in math, science, and English for grades third through eighth grade. What do you think of the excuse at this stage of the game that it's still due to these COVID lockdowns?
It's a classic example of don't blame me. And this is the way that, you know, shamefully, people need to understand it's not Democrats that are in charge of the public education system in Oregon. It's leftists that are in charge.
Yes.
And they are not the same thing. And I can speak with authority because both as a superintendent of Alsea School District, when I was superintendent there during COVID, keeping my school open, I didn't just serve conservative parents. We had many, many progressive and Democrat, you know, parents, all of whom were united under the belief that the school could be operated safely and that their kid would benefit by being in person instruction. And boy, have we been shown to be right.
Yeah, really.
But at the same time, this is these leftists, they're not accountable to any kind of truth or reality or accountability. And so what they're saying now is, if you'll see the push, they're saying, well, everything we did was designed to keep people safe. That's what they said, because the test scores are abysmal. This is the least capable generation of students, both last spring and this spring, that we will be graduating. And that's a darn shame, because, you know, heretofore, we were graduating kids who had the ability to learn and had some basic capacity. And now this is the lowest of the low. This is the lowest it's ever been since we've been keeping track. And you would think that the Democrats would come out and say, well, we need to learn from this, and we need to pivot. We need to get back to teaching the basics and reinstitute standards. That's not what they're doing. They're doubling down. And this is a crisis, because there will be no relief for kids. There's going to be no education. There will only be indoctrination.
Absolutely. So we're up against a break here. Election integrity, education, and gun laws. Oh, my. Lots more with Mark Thielman. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. He's a former superintendent for the Alsea School District. He is a political advocate, educational consultant, and activist. He's also the chief petitioner for Real School Choice here in Oregon, that is just qualified for the ballot. And that's going to be 2023 or 2024 on that one?
2024.
Okay. You can also visit battlegroundoregon.com. That's his election integrity site, and they're working with other states as well, so you can help support those efforts. So, Mark, you know, looking at the shambles that used to be a really good school system here in Oregon, I continue to be shocked at you keep thinking you've hit the bottom of the barrel, and yet we seem to have other barrels below us that we are now tunneling into. If you were state superintendent of school today, and of course this is a position that has been eliminated thanks to the voters that don't really understand that you really need to have separation of powers. You should not be investing all of this power into the governor. So those have been combined now. But if you were state superintendent of school today, what would be some of your first steps to reverse this decline? What should the state be doing that they're not?
Well, two things you have to do. First of all, you can accomplish all of the equity outcomes that the state supposedly is trying to impose by simply saying meet the needs of every kid. That is what the system is here to do. We're not here to judge. We're here to meet the needs of every individual student. Each student is different. Each student is unique. Each student is valuable. And our job is to try to get under the hood and find what works for this kid. And we're going to take all kids at the beginning of the year when we receive them in our public schools, and we're going to get good data on them. We're going to test baseline abilities in reading, writing, and math. And then we're going to have that data. We're going to redo that in the middle of the year and also in the spring. And that way we have real-time data checks that we can use to make corrections, course corrections, in support of individual students. You know, this was the model I used at ALC that was so incredibly successful, and why the district grew, you know, 500%. And during my tenure, because parents got real data on each of their children. If they had more than one, each children was different, had different supports. They were elated.
Sure.
And so you don't need to have a big comprehensive sex education pushes. You don't need to have individual LGBTQ curriculum, because each kid is each kid. And if that child's an LGBTQ kid, you're there to educate them and to meet their needs and to work with their parents and not to be judgmental. And so that would be the first set of values. That would be the first thing in my acceptance speech and my first day in office. And I'd be sending out correspondence and doing public relations about that. And what's so good about that is that the left can't argue with that. They can't come out and call me a bigot and a racist, because meeting the need of every kid means 100% of kids. The other thing is you focus on the basics, not only tying data so that parents have the data and that everyone, the parent and the teacher, can collaborate in support of the child, but you come out and say, we're going to do the fundamentals. So we get back to basics, reading, writing, math, period. Every child has to be able to have a base competency in those. And we're going to really focus on those outcomes. And then we're going to teach a culture where it's cool to be smart. And that's the other mistake that we currently make, because right now merit is chastised
right,
in the current
right.
school system.
Yeah, heaven forbid you actually do well in school and be able to succeed. It's shocking that the left doesn't want that sort of thing. But, you know, that's really what the left does is they constantly undermine America, constantly undermine the results, constantly undermine these kids, and because they're trying to destroy the future because they want control.
Well, they want conformity. Even though they say diversity, tolerance, that's not what they want. They want conformity and uniformity. And you got to remember, you cannot mistake, they tend to consider support and safety as uniformity. The uniformity never breeds safety for all kids. That's why you have to focus on each individual child.
Right.
And you need to collaborate with the experts on those children. And in the vast majority of cases, that's the parents. I mean, let's be real. And so parents are critical in the successful education of kids and good relationship with parents. Parents need to feel welcome and be brought into the system. That's how it operated in ALC for so many years, and it was so successful. And, we didn't need to advertise. We didn't need to do a lot of things in that, because we were a charter school, because word of mouth kept our waiting list plenty full. And it's a relationship that we have to reinstitute in our public schools, that we are here for individual kids and families. And we're not here to judge or push agenda.
Well, and so much of what is going on right now at the top rungs of the ladder there in the education system is just headed in the wrong direction. You've got the NEA out there. There's a fantastic article that we'll put up on iSpyRadio.com on this week's show page. The title is Teachers Leave National Education Association, they're saying that the union pushes politics with member dues. And that's part of the problem. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we have so many of these questionable outcomes when the NEA has gone full woke and yet is trying to hide it and keep it hidden from the general population in one of their recent reports. So what are your thoughts on their direction, how that's impacting kids here on local levels?
Well, the NEA is a useless organization, and it does not represent kids. I can remember several of their, quote, stated agendas going years back where they were going to boycott Israel or they're going to take stances on foreign politics. And none of that has anything to do with advocating for your members, which are your teachers who you're supposed to be collective bargaining for and advocating for. But it's become a arm of the Democratic National Committee.
Yes.
That is a fact. And there's a consequence to that. But you got to remember that they've been very effective at suppressing conservative members' voices. So they have an annual convention, and what they say is that all of these issues were majority issues of our members that voted. Well, you really think it's if you're a Republican history teacher in Georgia that you're going to be safe to become a national delegate at the NEA and get your conservative historical issue pushed out on the national stage? I got news for you. You're not even going to be a delegate.
Yeah.
And because it's not a Democratic organization. So people need to understand that. It's literally kind of a mob rule, and it's completely dominated by agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's take a break a little bit early. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Mark Thielman talking about education. Coming up, we'll be talking about gun laws and also election integrity. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. He is the former superintendent of the Alsea School District that saw a 500% increase in enrollment there under his leadership. He's also a political advocate, education consultant, and he's the chief petitioner for Real School Choice here in Oregon. And he's also focused on election integrity that we're going to come up to here real quick. Before we get there, though, I'm really curious, you know, as we mentioned previously, there is no state superintendent anymore, but have there been any discussions between you and hopefully future Governor Christine Drazen to take on the role of a state superintendent, even though it doesn't currently technically exist?
Yeah, well, we haven't had any real conversation. I noticed that she's been confronted by countless people on the campaign trail, so I'm aware. You know, I think she is open to that. She also knows that, you know, I'm kind of targeting some election integrity work and maybe Secretary of State, so I will be seeing her hopefully Saturday. Hopefully we'll be talking a little bit then, because I know she's been hit up on all sides. And just to be on the list is an honor.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll be on that list.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Right now, polls are looking good. In four different polls, she's up as high as 4%, and others have her about 2 to 3%. So well within the margin of error for sure. So that's really encouraging. School choice. This is something that you're the chief petitioner for. So talk to us a little bit about that in terms of some of the hurdles you have going forward at all, and just give your pitch to the audience here.
Well, as you know, we made an initial push, and that was thrown out because they said we were bringing up more than one issue. And so what we did is we separated out the open enrollment aspect. So now we have two petitions. One is school choice. And what it does is it sets up a situation in which we amend the state constitution so that the money follows the child. And it's based on the state school fund. It plugs into the current state model, so it doesn't create a whole new, you know, bureaucracy or calculation per se. And it also coordinates through local public school districts for parents if they're interested in putting their kid in a private school, even private religious school. Or maybe they're interested in getting some funding, state funding, to support their homeschool choices and curriculum and activities. All of those things are covered by this school choice initiative. And what it says is that children belong to parents, and that parent choice is a constitutional right, that parents can help direct, and they get the ability to shop around and find out which educational pathway best fits their child, and that the money will follow the child in that journey. And obviously it's popular with people of all political persuasions. The one thing all parents have in common is they tend to love their kids in general. That tends to be the vast majority value. And so we've gotten a lot of support. There is concern among the homeschool community, naturally. And between the first round and this second one, we did the opposite of what our government does. I sat down with all kinds of homeschool folks in the Ocean Group and many, many others, more than I can recount, and really listened. And there were some patterns there. So I made sure that working with Education for Freedom folks and attorneys that we got wording legalized, precedent-supported wording, and that protects homeschool parents from regulation from the state, especially those that say, I do want to access these funds. So you have options. You don't have to access the funds at all. You can continue homeschooling the way you always have. If you choose to access the funds, those funds pile up if you don't spend them. So it's a potential economic advantage. If there's money left over when the child graduates, they can use that for higher education, voc training, or college. And what's really special about it is it's a playing field leveler.
Oh, exactly. So that's why I am so excited about this, because right now the only people in Oregon that have true school choice are the very wealthy. They can send their kid anywhere they want. But right now, if you're middle income or low income, now you've got the funds to send your kid to the school of your choice. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. It really is kind of an odd situation that you've created, because you've kind of forced the state and the people that would oppose this, like the teachers union and whatnot, you've kind of forced them into a corner that they have to defend. They're saying, on the one hand, you should pay into the system, but you have no say in it. And now this has totally flipped that around. You pay into it. It's your money. They acknowledge that. And guess what? You can spend it any way you want. So I think it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Yeah. And here's the most important piece, is that the language is expressingly clear in this constitutional amendment. As soon as that money is funded through the nonprofit of the parent's choice, it is no longer government money. And that is critical in terms of protecting homeschool parents, their households, their persons, from government regulation. And that language is also in there, that the government cannot require any change in, pedagogy, curriculum, et cetera, mm-hmm. from what the parent was prior investing in and doing. And that is incredibly important language. It's constitutional moving forward. And that's the highest form of protection that we can have.
Right.
And I really think it's important, because it forces parents to use constitutional language if they do have concern, or if they are getting harassed by their local district regarding.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. And I think moving forward too, it really kind of separates the politics from it as well, because the parents are making so many of these decisions. And this is important moving into the election cycle here. We've got less than just barely a month now until election day. And, if you want to improve your kids' educational choices, voting Democrat is not going to help you. Real quick, one of my advantages growing up, I think, is that I went to a small rural school, but it was also one of the best funded schools, because it had a huge property tax base literally right across the street, the world famous Chautauqua Institution. My graduating class was 36. So we all knew each other very well. And in our own ways, we helped keep people on the straight and narrow. We didn't get lost in the shuffle the way that kids do in large schools. And I'm really envisioning this school choice moving forward. I think that's going to be one of the big innovations that school choice offers, is the return of small, basically one-room schoolhouses, where a teacher takes on a small set of the kids, maybe 10, 15, that sort of thing, easily managed, where the kids can actually focus and truly learn without all the distractions and sideshows. And also parents know their kids are getting a top-notch education. So do you see that as well, these micro schools?
Yes.
And what other innovations do you foresee?
Well, it's like the gig economy. So let's say you're a teacher, a conservative teacher, and you're told that you have to teach children that they can change their gender, and you have to have kindergarten kids color their favorite genitalia, and you don't really think that that's the purpose of education or the focus. So you can simply put your, shingle out on the sidewalk and say, I'm here to teach a K-3 pod school, and I'm looking for students. And interested families can meet, and they can hire their own teacher, and that teacher can run his or her own program in coordination with parents, and then those funds can be used to pay the teacher. The innovative opportunities are huge.
Yes.
The opportunities for small groups of moms to and dads in particular to get together, and it's a real opportunity for innovation in education.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. Okay, everyone, stay with us. We're going to take a break here. Come back. We'll be talking about election integrity and then coming up those gun control laws. And welcome back. We're talking today with Mark Thielman. He is the former superintendent for the Alsea School District. He's also a political advocate, education consultant, and activist out there. You can find out more about what he's doing there on battlegroundoregon.org, and we'll come to that in actually this segment. So this is your election integrity website. What are some of the things that you guys are focused on?
Well, obviously, we're focused on getting a lot of election integrity-minded people connected together and working together. And then training people on how to use the tools of the left against the left. So we have a very hostile Secretary of State. She has given out very clear directives to disrupt and not cooperate with canvassers and other what have become conservative groups who started their work really with the intention of saying, well, maybe we should just check out our local county, just make sure everything's on the up and up. And the local county clerks, course, all correspondence goes through the Secretary of State. Is a lot of folks have learned in this process, that it's really the Secretary of State that pulls the string. They hold the funding, and all of the rules have been very centralized. So what you end up with is that the very government that's supposed to be engaging with people who are in looking into election integrity is the government that is obstructing.
Yes,
and that relationship is similar, no different than Jim Crow saying to certain people of color, African Americans, you don't get equal access, but you can have separate access, separate but equal, right? That was the whole hallmark of Plessy versus Ferguson. And that's what really got me into election integrity, is I thought, this is very similar to the tools that Southern states used to marginalize and disenfranchise people while saying they weren't disenfranchised. I mean, that's what this is. So that was remedied by Brown versus Board of Education of Kansas, 1954. And that's a Supreme Court precedent that said the very existence of separate but equal creates a crisis of confidence and a disparity of access that violates the 14th or the equal clause of the 14th Amendment.
And that's really been baffling to me, is why on earth are Democrats not concerned about this?
They should be.
Yeah, absolutely they should be. We should all want fair and free and open and transparent elections. But for some reason, just want to keep hiding things behind their back and say, don't look, everything's fine.
Well, this is why I always separate between Democrats and leftists, because there are many Democrats are supporting Battleground Oregon and have been a great help for me in this process, because people really do, Democrats, independents also are participating. And Republicans, they're all united under the belief that the Constitution is important. And and it's shocking when they start to see the behavior of especially Democrats, of the government they've heretofore supported. And you cannot disenfranchise a whole section of the electorate if people are don't believe their vote matters, or even if they do participate, don't believe it counts fully. We've got a problem. And that's really what Battleground is working on doing. We're going to be filing a federal case this week, hopefully Friday. And it's a class action lawsuit, and it's the result of a lot of conservatives in a lot of counties working together through the Battleground umbrella in ways that they wouldn't have worked together with before. Because Battleground came in and said, hey, well, you want to talk to an attorney? Here's an attorney, free of charge. And that way groups could get kind of organized, and pretty soon we start connecting with each other and networking. Now we're all working together. And there's a bright future for election integrity here in the state of Oregon. And this suit will be one step in that process of holding the government accountable, because the plaintiffs in this case, there's 10 counties that are being named in the suit. Each plaintiff and the class of voters they represent all started their election integrity work with the intention of proving there wasn't voter fraud in their county.
Mm.
And guess what? Guess how they were treated?
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So had mentioned people have gotten involved on the county levels and have started looking around. Are you able to share maybe some things that people are finding that are worrisome or that are very concerning?
Oh. Well, in my county, Lane County is a classic example. The Lane County Republican group has done, you know, they probably get 5 gold stars because they were one of the first to get organized and go out. And what they did is they started canvassing and looking at the registration rolls and public records requesting that information. And eventually they got it. And sure enough, they found out at one house, 64 people are registered to vote at a rental house up in Eugene. And there's only 2 people living there. And so they went the next step, which is they had affidavit forms and asked the folks that are renting to sign an affidavit. And sure enough, those folks were like, yeah, all these ballots showed up and then this person came and picked them up. So the beauty of it is there's real evidence out there that something's afoot. And what's nice about the lawsuit is the lawsuit doesn't have to say we're proving voter fraud, because it's just like in the Jim Crow South. There was a gas station that had an unequal set of facilities. So white folks had a sink to wash their hands in after using the bathroom, and African-Americans had a garden hose. This is a real example.
Mm-hmm.
That's separate, but it's not equal. And so that gas station lost. They were sued by a social, you know, justice organization back in the day, and they lost. And when the Georgia legislature was confronted with the issue, they came out and said, well, that was just one gas station. That's not the whole state of Georgia. Are we ready? Well, that's just one example of voter fraud. That's only 64 votes. That's not enough. And this is why the Democrats, or the Democrat National Committee, if you will, has been so hostile to election integrity people. So, but see, we don't have to prove fraud to have a crisis of confidence.
Right.
To have a violation of the equal protection clause of the 14th Amendment.
I think that's a great approach to it. Okay, we're coming on a break. Let's take that early. Coming up, we'll wrap things up here with election integrity and also look at those gun bills. Stay with us. More with Mark Thielman. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Mark Thielman. Coming up, we will be having Alex Scarlatis on, so be sure to stick around for that. Mark Thielman is the former superintendent for the Alsea School District that saw a 500% increase in enrollment under his leadership. He's also now a political advocate and an education consultant. And you are in the middle of filing a lawsuit that will be filed this next week here. And just to clear that up a little bit, it's a class action lawsuit, and it's being filed against Shamia Fagan, correct?
That is correct. And 10 counties.
And 10 counties. Okay. So what exactly is the relief that you're seeking?
Well, the relief is 2 things. One is when you're dealing with issues of confidence, we need to have some injunctive relief that does a couple of things. So one is a request for forensic imaging that would be done before and after the election. And then the other is also a request that all records like cast vote records be made public in all said counties, because that would go a long way. It's similar to what the Tim Sipple case, for example, wanted, about making sure that one, settling the question, these are public records, and 2, they should be available to the public under the guise that they would be reassuring to the public if people could do their own analysis.
Sure, sure.
So those are the two focuses. The forensic imaging is important because if there are algorithms running or there's changes to data, you have a good chance of detecting that. And then the other issue is making sure that after an election, or even potentially during, people can request and have access to some of those records.
Sure.
And that goes a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. And because that's not how trust forms. You can't be saying, trust me, and then hold all the data behind your back and saying, sure, it's totally on the up and up. So I'm glad to see this is moving forward. And because there is and has been fraud, we have seen this in other states. In fact, the CEO of a voting company in Michigan that was suing True the Vote just got himself arrested for doing exactly what they had accused them of, storing data over in overseas in China there. DA of Los Angeles County, of all things, is the one that did the arrest. So I find that shocking. In the time that we have left, though, we do want to talk about this gun bill that is being pushed forward. Is ballot measure 114. You can head to stop114.com to find out some more information. But the NRA says that ballot measure 114 is the nation's most extreme gun control initiative and will be voted on this November. If the measure passes, Oregon will unconstitutionally ban magazines capable of holding more than 10 rounds of ammunition and most modern shotguns. It will create a government registry of law-abiding gun owners' personal information and require a permit to purchase or transfer a firearm, which will require classroom and live fire training from law enforcement. So talk to us a little bit about this. I know you guys have a rally on Saturday, which unfortunately is going to be before our show airs on many stations. But so what is this fight really about, and how are you guys trying to stop this?
Yeah, part of it is about to bring people together and a show of force, if you will. Because 114 has backfired, in my opinion, on the people that wrote it and the advocates of the left. Because we have Democrats, we have independents, we have people of all walks of life who value their right to bear arms. And we've seen this just an explosion of support, and people are unifying against 114 because, and it's just simple logic, the U.S. Constitution is very clear. We have the Bill of Rights, and there is no requirement to get a permit before you can exercise that right. That is the bottom line. This isn't about concealed carry. This isn't about, gun storage. This is about making it almost impossible to legally buy a gun in Oregon. And consequently, people are genuinely going to be harmed because they will no longer have the freedom to defend themselves. And yet the U.S. Supreme Court has been very clear that we have a right of self-defense in this country, which means that you can have your gun more. You can't be required to just keep your gun in your house like they were doing in some states, aka New York. So this is a big deal. It's a watershed moment. It's an opportunity for people prior to the election to come out and show a force and say, that's what's going on this Saturday up at the Capitol, and say, hey, no more. We are all here. We're diverse. We are nonpartisan. And we value our Second Amendment rights and our right to bear arms and our right to defend ourselves, our houses, holds our property and our person. It's a wonderful, awesome thing coming down. And we even ordered the weather special. It's going to be beautiful Saturday.
I certainly hope so. And of course, it's the leftist tactics. You never go after the full end where you're really going, which is to take away all guns from all people. It's about chipping away at your rights, and we certainly see this. They're trying to limit the magazines and whatnot. There's really no need to do that, for heaven's sakes. But in terms of this law, I would imagine if it got passed, it would be challenged at the Supreme Court. But I am curious, though, would it stop people from buying across state lines and be able to bring those guns back?
No, I mean, let's be honest. Obviously it'll be challenged. Most likely will not pass the constitutional muster with SCOTUS, with the Supreme Court of the United States. But in the meantime, they implement it. And what does it do? It forces otherwise law-abiding people who don't want to be hassled, who are put in a possible, impossible situation of having to secure their gun somewhere else. Now, how is that good for safety in society?
Yeah.
It's just crazy is what it is. So yeah. We need to stop 114 right away. It does more than just control guns. It also has aspects of the language that say you can't buy your own vitamins. You have to have a doctor and an expert.
Well,
I think it was written by a gal named Karen, but that's just me.
Yeah.
My personal bias. So
that website one more time is stop114.com, and those are numbers. So it's stop114.com. If you're listening to this on one of our stations airing iSpy before that rally against Measure 114, it starts at noon on Saturday the 8th on the steps of the Capitol. For our listeners who can't be there, do visit that website, stop114.com. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock, though, Mark. Thanks so much for visiting with us today and all that you're doing out there.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to welcome Alex Garlanos back to the show. He is running for Congress in Oregon's 4th Congressional District. Alec, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, unfortunately, we only have you for the one segment today, so let's just jump right in. You've been doing a lot of trips around CD4 to connect with your constituents and voters. What's been your takeaway about the issues that are most important to them?
I think most everyone this year is concerned with inflation and the price of gas. I mean, gas is on the rise again. 550 here in Oregon.
Oh.
Inflation, of course, is hurting everyone across the country. I mean, you're working literally 1 month out of the year just to pay for the added inflation cost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 550 is pretty high. Here it's 529, I think, in most stations. So what's been some of the feedback they're giving you about inflation and how it's really impacting them? And also, as you talked with some of these groups, have they offered remedies or solutions or other ideas that they would like to see Congress take up?
Well, yeah, most people, I think, are smart enough to realize that inflation is primarily tied to government spending. I mean, we've spent trillions of dollars over the last few years. And this is something that Republicans do as well, of course, but
sure.
Especially Democrats. I mean, they've added a tremendous amount to the national debt. That's something that we have to deal with, especially, you know, my generation. And I think everyone just wants the government to stop spending money so that inflation goes down. And then, of course, you know, keep in mind, on top of inflation, this is the poorest congressional district in the state. So we can afford inflation and these high gas prices the least. And on top of that, you know, my opponent has a track record of raising taxes. So it's just we're just headed in the wrong direction economically on just about every front.
Are you hearing from constituents that they're tying Val Hoyle and the Democrats to what's going on, that they're the ones to blame, or are they just upset in general?
For the most part, yes. I mean, there's always going to be like those hardline Democrats that are never going to vote Republican or even third party, no matter what. I think even they know deep down that their party's the cause for all of this, but it's not really going to change their mind. But all the people in the middle, all the people that, you know, go back and forth depending on the election, they're swinging Republican this cycle very heavily. And those are the kind of people that we have to win over.
Yep.
And I think we're doing a good job on that.
So in your campaign's latest press release, you talk about your opponent, Democrat Val Hoyle, raising taxes on those earning $31,000 or more. You say, quote, "Val Hoyle is a career politician, and the way that she pays for extreme big government ideas is through her higher fees on hunters, anglers, and commercial fishing, from raising fees on sportsmen, hospitals, and doctors, or raising taxes even on families making as little as $31,000 a year. Val Hoyle will be a perfect rubber stamp for Joe Biden's economic policies, and such a wonderful, successful economy it is." So when you go through some of her votes, are there some that when you expose them that people are like, whoa, I can't believe she did that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, especially the tax on nursing homes and hospitals. I think everyone's pretty horrified by that because, again, those hospital costs are already incredibly high. Taxing nursing homes, I mean, that's the most vulnerable population. And again, most people can barely afford the cost of nursing homes. They're incredibly expensive. And then you're going to raise taxes on them on top of that. I mean, that's absolutely insane. And then, of course, you know, the taxes on hunters that she's passed and fishermen, that's, I feel like, almost targeting, especially on the state level. We've seen that the Democrats in Oregon have targeted really Republicans and conservatives with certain tax hikes that really don't affect their voter base, but Republican voter base.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of a tax here on people making $31,000, that was back in 2011. I think that's pretty shocking, especially since it was a measure rejected by voters by almost a 2-to-1 margin. So how does she defend votes like that?
I have no idea. I think they're pretty indefensible. I mean, again, this is the poorest congressional district in the state of Oregon. We have quite a few people making less than $31,000. And again, that's combined income of a family making $31,000. I mean, that's even worse. It's pretty horrific. $31,000 is not very much money, especially nowadays, but even back then. And this is the poorest congressional district in the state. We cannot afford this.
Mm. Well, and there's some other taxes here, too. She raised transient lodging tax rate. I assume that when they say transient lodging, that's hotels, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. So she raised that to 1.8% for 4 years and 1.5% after that. I mean, it's just tax, 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 tax. Is there ever any, even an inkling in her head about maybe we should cut back on spending?
I wish there was. And unfortunately, we are paying the price now, especially with Joe Biden and all of these Democrats that really have a track record of increased government spending and increased taxes. I mean, that's why we have 8.3% inflation right now. We cannot afford let Valhoil get to Congress and continue to raise taxes and continue to increase government spending. We've seen where that gets us over the last 2 years. It's not a good place, and it's a road that we should not continue down. Especially, we shouldn't accelerate down it once Valhoil gets to Congress. So I think we need a change, and I think the people here in Oregon are tired of the direction this country and the state is headed in.
Sure. We've only got about a minute here. So real quick, as a former National Guard member, what are your thoughts on the current state of our military and how Biden is treating the troops?
Well, I think we're, I would not want to be in the military right now.
Well,
let me say that first of all. I mean, the way we handled the Afghanistan withdrawal, where 13 American troops were killed in the last week of the conflict in the largest ground attack in the entire global war on terror's history, I think shows you everything you need to know about our military these days. Not to mention, no general was fired or resigned after that attack. So we still have that same leadership, including Joe Biden, running our military, handling the Russia-Ukraine situation, and God forbid, China and Taiwan.
So it
gives me no confidence.
No, absolutely not. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Alec, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we only just briefly touched on that important story of the CEO of Connick, a voting company. So here's what happened. True the Vote investigated Connick and claimed that they discovered Connick had stored data on an unsecured server in Wuhan, China, which True the Vote hacked into and downloaded the data, including personal data on 1.8 million poll workers. Connick vehemently denied any such thing, saying all of their data is stored securely on servers right here in America. So they sued True the Vote. The judge in the case even issued a temporary restraining order against True the Vote, saying that Connick would suffer irreparable harm. The order also prevented True the Vote from continuing their investigations or making any more baseless claims that Connick was using servers in China. Except, on Tuesday, the CEO, Eugene Yu, was arrested in Michigan, on behalf of Los Angeles County, no less, for doing exactly what True the Vote accused them of doing, storing voting information on poll workers on a server in China. Whoops. I'm sure True the Vote looks forward to Connick's deep and sincere apology, and maybe one from the judge. Some websites for you before we go. Alec's campaign site is Alec for Oregon. That's Alec with a K, the word, not the number, F-O-R, alecfororegon.com, battlegroundoregon.org, battlegroundoregon.org, and stop114.com. We'll put all of those on today's show page at ispyradio.com. Be sure to share those and links to ispyradio.com as well. If you use podcasts, please give us a subscribe. We are terrible self-promoters, so we appreciate your help getting good information out there, and thank you for helping us spread the word. Remember, take action when you can, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.